cities and towns across Wisconsin share a number of questions and challenges. How to maintain a vibrant downtown, how to keep younger people from moving away, how to provide modern-day services without giving up a unique historical identity.
We've heard these questions come up from Wausau to Waukesha, from Columbus to Milwaukee. A lot of it boils down to this. What's unique about our community? How can we build on that? How can we share that with the world? Our next guest has been working with communities on these issues for years. Andy Lewis joins us now. He's a professor and a community development specialist, now retired as of Monday, at the UW Extension Center for Community and Economic Development. Andy, thanks a lot for joining us in the studio.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you've worked with communities around the state and some around the country. How common are these issues for communities to be developed, to be dealing with?
Well, it's very common, and I think it's actually one of the starting points for communities that want to improve themselves. I mean, it's not a matter of whether communities want to change, it's whether they want to guide that change, right? And most communities are interested in guiding that in a positive way, and this is a good place to start. What are they known for?
And this is something that communities have the power to do something about, because you mentioned a change will happen whether you want it or not. Communities actually have power to do something about this.
Absolutely, and you know, when you talk about things that a community are famous for, there are certainly communities that start off with a negative image, and that's much more challenging to try to overcome that than starting from scratch and really having a non-identity. But there are certainly examples of communities that have even reversed very negative images into a positive one.
Like, what can you give an example or two?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to even pick on them, but because it's a positive story, I think about when I moved down to Grant County, Wisconsin, in southwesternmost county, right across the river in Dubuque. Even in the 1980s, they were burning crosses in Dubuque. And I remember just thinking, how could that possibly be happening in a city like Dubuque? And Dubuque didn't have a positive image, kind of a rundown industrial town. But Dubuque is now being held up as one of the poster childs for how a community can turn itself around and kind of regenerated interest in its location on the river with the River Museum and downtown revitalization. And it's a fabulous community to visit today. But I could, you know, you could talk about Cleveland. You could talk about a number of other communities that had a less than positive image.
Well, let's start with a community that maybe doesn't have much of an identity, much less a negative one. How do you start figuring out, hey, what is unique about us? What is our selling point?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that have to be in place, and I couldn't help but mention leadership. You have to have leadership within the community that sees this as a priority and that wants to get the community engaged in making that decision. And by that, I don't necessarily mean elected officials. You know, that could be the leadership within a chamber of commerce or a Main Street organization or a civic organization or even just a collection of people in their community that want to do something positive. But it certainly helps if you have the elected officials on board and it becomes kind of your official slogan or your official identity that you're working on. And then you have to have a process in place. You have to have a process to help determine what it is that you're trying to do and the image that you're trying to portray. And there are some tools to help with that that I spend a few minutes talking about. I mentioned to you just at the start of the program that one of the programs I developed, it's almost been 25 years now, with a colleague down in Gotham, Wisconsin, James Schneider, who was the economic development director in Grant County at the time. We developed a program called First Impressions. And First Impressions was a community that paired up two similar communities, and we applied the secret shopper concept. The community sent a team of volunteers in to visit the community, and we essentially gave them a cookbook or a checklist of the things to check out in the community and then reflect back on that. So the comments and the pictures that they take are in a final report, and the community gets a good summary of how outside visitors might view their community as a place to visit, a place to live, or a place to do business. And that's been a very effective program. It hasn't gone away. And we did the first exchange in 1991 between Fenimore and Bellevue, Iowa. And that's now been used by over 600 communities in Canada and the U.S. So that's a fun, simple way to maybe get started and not just do navel gazing with a bunch of residents sitting around a table thinking about, you know, what it is that they do well. Because if they're trying to appeal to outsiders, that's a great program to use to get at that.
Now, suppose you've got that initial leadership, whoever it is that wants to do this, that wants to maybe take that first step. I imagine this can't just be a top-down process. Who needs to be at the table? What stakeholders need to be involved to get buy-in to make something like this actually take fire and actually work?
Yeah, I think effective communities find ways to engage a broad section of the community, and it's not easy to do that. I mean, there are communities where a select number of people seem to make a lot of the decisions, but I think the most effective communities find a way to get people engaged. And, not surprisingly, I think that starts with education. You have a lot of uninformed people in the community that really don't know what's going on at the city council meetings or the Chamber of Commerce meetings. So you start with education, and then slowly you work them into being participants, and then hopefully some of those participants become leaders in the community and want to play a role.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, it seems like apathy is your biggest enemy, and not in a negative way. People have lives. They're worried about their house, their job, their kids, and things like that. How do you get more of those people to say, all right, I want to step up and be part of this process that's going to be boring or contentious from time to time, but it's worth it in the long run?
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the reasons why a program like First Impressions was popular, because it is fun. I mean, who doesn't like to play a visitor for the day? Who doesn't like to go visit communities and not only learn about the strengths and weaknesses in their communities, but learn from another similar community, see what other communities are doing right and wrong. But there's passionate people in every community, but it takes somebody to organize that and to get people around the table and starting a process. And so I just mentioned First Impressions, but the Center for Community and Economic Development, where I worked about half of my 32 years, has developed a number of tools. The Community Economic Development Preparedness Index is another one that steps communities through a number of factors that influence the local economy. Downtown retreats. Bill Ryan, one of my longtime colleagues, is kind of known as the downtown guru in Wisconsin and is very knowledgeable about the issues within Main Street, has developed a whole toolbox to help develop our Main Street areas. Just doing listening sessions or a technique like snow carding, which is just jotting down ideas on index cards and organizing them around themes. There are a number of things that you can do as part of that community development process to get people engaged and to build some kind of consensus.
Talking to Andy Lewis, longtime community development specialist here in Wisconsin, about what communities can do to figure out what their identity is and then use that identity to bring in business, get young people to stay, get other good things out of their city or their town. So it sounds like there's a lot of tools there so they don't have to reinvent the wheel. When people go through the kind of processes you're talking about, what are some of the identities you've seen towns and cities adopt? I could think of a lot, charming art community or bustling downtown or mm-hmm. great place to live and commute from. What's the range of things people come up with?
Yeah, well, I had a colleague who is also now retired, Dave Mensch. And Dave Mensch, back in 1989, did a report on community slogans to try to figure out, well, what were communities using for an identity in Wisconsin? And then, equally important, did that have any economic benefits, or what were the benefits of having a slogan? And actually, you can still find most of those communities listed in a Wikipedia listing. So if you're interested in that, go online, do a search on Wikipedia by Wisconsin community nicknames. And about 80% of the citations are from Dave's study going back to 1989. When I look at Wisconsin, I think, not surprisingly, a lot of communities have capitalized on natural amenities, their proximity to a national forest or a wild river or some kind of a hobby like turkey hunting capital of Wisconsin. There's two communities, I think, that claim that. Boscobel's one. And you have actually a number of the communities that have the same slogan. So that, doing some homework, things like the Wikipedia search would help you maybe not pick an identity that somebody else has and try to come up with something that's unique.
So once you have that identity, how do you harness that? How do you let other people know about it in such a way that gets them to do what you want, come in and tour or spend money in your town, maybe move there?
Yeah, I think there's some good news, and I wanted to make sure I put in this plug that Christine Runge has been hired by the Center for Community and Economic Development. She's actually a community marketing specialist that you'd probably want to have on the show after she starts in August. But she's going to help communities figure that out. I mean, what do you do with that unique resource that you have in the community, and how do you get some social or economic benefits out of that? But I'd argue that some kind of an identity, whether that's slogan or just some kind of infrastructure that you're known for, you start to build that into your signage. You start to build it into festivals or a community event. You certainly build that into your promotion and advertising and communications with the media. And when Dave did his study of slogans, what he found is by having that identity, it really had an impact in four areas. It helped build an identity. People want to be known for something, right? When you explain where you're from and you tell them the community, it's nice to be able to say, well, we're known for this or that. I think that that's important. He talked about the impact that it has on community pride, that when people are proud of the community that they're from, they're more likely to get involved in some of the things that we were just talking about. That's how you get people passionate about their community and willing to volunteer some time to improve it. It also has an impact on perhaps community services or just building community. And then lastly, the economic benefit. I mean, we have a wealth of huge community festivals in this state that have large economic benefits.
We're talking to UW Extension Community Development Specialist Andy Lewis, looking at ways Wisconsin cities and towns can build a unique identity and then use that identity to maybe promote tourism, keep and attract residents, and make more vibrant downtown areas.
And you can join the conversation. What makes your community unique? What is your city or your town doing to build on that, or what does it still need to do, do you think? What is your downtown like today? Is it vibrant, active, charming, or is it run down, overlooked, maybe somewhere in between? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation with Andy Lewis, Community Development Specialist at the UW Extension Center for Community and Economic Development. We're looking at ways to build a unique community identity and how Wisconsin towns and cities can use that identity to promote downtown areas and keep younger people from moving away.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What's the story in your community? What makes your town or your city unique? Is it history, parks, waterfronts, stores, art, you name it? What could be done to promote that more? If you're younger, what would get you to stay in or leave your hometown? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Andy, arts, a lot of towns have gone that way as a something, or arts and culture, I should say, to promote their identity. Eau Claire has done a lot of this. Their big music festival, their inaugural music festival, kicks off pretty soon. Is that a common direction that we see a lot of communities going in?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you think about it, most communities have obviously more than one asset. And so it can be a little bit of a challenge deciding, well, what is it that you actually want to be famous for? What are you going to use for your marketing approach? And as I was thinking about this show, I was actually thinking about my father, who worked on the state recreation plan back in the 1960s, and they used a really interesting process to try to identify the parcels that they should prioritize for purchase for public lands. And they had community meetings all across the state, and they developed a series of icons. The icons were done by Bruce Murray, now retired landscape architect. He actually lives a few blocks from me. And those icons fell into a number of categories: cultural, historical, natural, man-made. That process would be really relevant today to do the same thing, or maybe even just do a checkup on that 1960 study and see how many of those resources are still around. But by taking an asset-based approach and actually taking the time to inventory what you have in the community, I think that's how you get at what's unique about your community.
We'll go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We've got Jamie on the line in Boscobel. Jamie, hi.
Hi. Hi, Andy. It's Jamie. How are you?
I recognize that voice. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I promise I'll get that video of your father to you.
Yeah.
Hey, the reason why I'm calling is that Boscobel used to be the birthplace of the Gideon Bible, and then they adopted that, wild turkey hunting capital. What do you think about communities that try to capitalize on two different mottos?
You know, Jamie, I don't see any reason why you can't do both. And in Dave's study, he actually mentions both of those for basketball. And maybe the way you most effectively do that is if you have different organizations taking the lead. So if there's a, you know, one big, you know, turkey hunting is seasonal. You've got the spring season and the fall season. So what do you do the rest of the year? And so that's the Gideon Bible. So I think communities have limited resources, and for that reason, many communities choose one. But I don't see any reason why, multiple events or multiple things that you're known for would be problematic. And just find different organizations within the community to take the lead role.
Jamie, thanks for your call. Talking to Andy Lewis about community identities in Wisconsin. Still time for your call at 800-642-1234. What makes your town, your city, your area unique? What do people think of when they think of it? Or what should we think of when we hear the name of your town? 800-642-1234. Andy, we hear a lot about brain drain at different levels in the state. Young people grow up, they move somewhere else to get a job, somewhere else that matches their lifestyle needs. What are communities doing to try to turn the tide on that?
Well, I tell this story a number of times. So when I first moved to Lancaster, Al Weber was the mayor there, and he was one of the first people to come into my office. And Al used to get really frustrated with the community that talked about brain drain, that the best and brightest were leaving the community. And he always argued that we ought to encourage our youth to explore the world, and what we ought to focus on is building communities where people will want to come back to. So if the community ignored the needs of the youth, they're never coming back. They would never consider coming back to raise a family or to start a business or to retire in that community. But if their needs were taken care of as a youth, that would be much more likely to happen. But there has been, I think, a resurgence of interest in attracting young, urban, highly educated professionals, for example. I've seen that interest in a number of communities. And the biggest reason is that Wisconsin lags behind in that many of our communities are probably seen as not being desirable to that group. But, you know, as I go through and I think about the things that are attractive to that demographic, I find myself thinking, well, I'm interested in that as an old fart. You know, I like having live music and the arts and places to meet. And, you know, we're not young forever either. That's the other thing. So the things that are important to the young urban professionals are going to be different in 20 years. So we really need to have communities that are appealing to all demographics. But certainly those issues can create conflict in a community, and it's important to manage that. And again, at least give people the opportunity to participate in the process. But at the end of the day, communities have to do well at attracting and retaining all demographics.
Yeah, I've heard of that conflict you mentioned where if you're trying to provide those services for the young people, the amenities that bring them in, are you losing the unique character, the traditions of that town at the same time? Can you have both, or is there necessarily a conflict there?
There are certainly communities that go through transitions. And I remember when I was in college reading LeMaster's Blue Collar Aristocrats, which talked about the community where I live today, which is Middleton. And that book was, the research was done in a tavern. And it was actually a best-selling academic book. But it talked about the transition from Middleton going from a blue-collar community to a white-collar community. So those changes do take place. It does create tension. But, I would argue that, no, a community should never lose what contributes to the quality of life. So those historic elements of the community, the cultural, the things that were part of their history, I think those things should always be preserved. But I think we also need to be cognizant and aware of what some groups require. And it may be something more than that. And maybe those things may be less important to them.
Time for a quick call, Patrick in Eau Claire. Patrick, hi, briefly, what did you want to bring up?
Oh, you know, one of the things that really attracts young professionals like myself to places like Eau Claire, where I've been living for 1 year, is waterfront dining. And in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, we have two rivers that meet, but zero waterfront dining. So I'd like to get your thoughts on maybe some other communities that have done waterfront dining as part of their economic development strategies.
Patrick, thanks a lot. Briefly, take advantage of that waterfront if you can.
Andy. Yeah, Patrick, that's a great point, and it's amazing how many communities are located in proximity to natural resources like that and don't take full advantage of that. So while I'm talking about Madison, I think you could be somewhat critical of Madison of not having a number of spots. But if you look at Madison and the redevelopment of the Edgewater, for example, the Edgewater Hotel and Restaurant, phenomenal place to see a view. The building of the Monona Terrace finally provided a public access point for the lakes and the rivers. But there are a lot of communities that have the same problem that you have in Eau Claire, that for some reason they don't recognize the value of that natural amenity.
Andy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's former professor, just retired professor Andrew Lewis, community development specialist, talking about community identity in Wisconsin. Keep it going on the Central Time Facebook page.